Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tape Lake Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, Sidney Crosby isn't a fan of red hats, Chris Kunitz dodges a suspension, and everything else playoffs. Plus, you know what? You can change our overtime when you can pry it from our cold, dead hands. What am I talking about? Find out on The Rink. I hate to jump on this bandwagon in a way because every year it seems like it's the exact same conversation. But the big talk today is due to the triple overtime game Sunday that was broadcast on NBC between the Ducks and the Red Wings. The big talk in the media right now is, should they change the overtime format? As it stands, for those of you who either live in Columbus or are otherwise unfamiliar with the overtime format, the overtime is basically 5-on-5 sudden death. First guy to score wins, 20 minutes a period, just like the rest of the regulation. But because it inconveniences NBC and possibly showing more hats before a 2-minute horse race, the discussion is changing overtime. Tom, I know how I feel about this. It's the same way I felt about it for a long time. But I want to start with you. What do you think?
I want to know why the NHL should fundamentally change their game for a dying distribution medium known as network television. Viewership is down, ad rates are down. NBC as a company doesn't command the same respect it did 10, 15 years ago. The whole world is moving to on-demand / pay-per-view everything. I mean, especially with the thing that some of the reports I'm hearing out of what Comcast is trying to do with their on-demand service, the networks are quaking in their boots, and the NHL should stick to their guns. Mm-hmm. It's the NHL's game. It's our game. If NBC doesn't like the fact that they've got playoff hockey that goes indefinitely, tough. Fundamentally tough. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Put all the games on the regional sports networks and maintain distributive control and simulcast the entire Stanley Cup playoffs over the internet.
Yeah.
We do not need the networks. We don't need ESPN. We don't need any of these freaking people. Mm-hmm. They're desperate for our content, not the other way around. And especially since NBC doesn't even friggin' pay for the damn games.
Right, it's content.
We pay them.
It's pretty much a profit sharing, and they both made money. Yeah. But from what I understand, it was only about $3 million, which breaks down to $100,000 per team. That won't even cover an entry-level contract. Not even remotely close.
It doesn't even cover Andrew Peters and the guys they're trying to get rid of. Mm-hmm. I mean, league minimum is over almost $500,000 a year for the players, for Christ's sake. It doesn't even cover the medical costs on, you know, the goaltenders of one team. Forget it.
No,
NBC to go scratch.
Yeah, my personal feeling is that, you know, we've already turned the season into the with the shootout, it turns into a skills competition, and the last thing we need is more reasons. Now, to me though, if there is one thing that bugs me is that even as a proponent, I guess you could call me, of the referees, I try and keep a pretty
right.
level outlook on the referees, and I think I succeed most of the time, and not sure. all of the time, but most of the time.
Sure.
That they do, you know, I think that they absolutely should be calling penalties in overtime, as you mm-hmm. know, and the number one thing that I've heard has been, let the players decide. And I feel that that as a player, if you're going to put your stick on a guy's body, you're deciding. If you give him a tug, you're deciding. If you're interfering, you're making that choice to do that. You know, and so long as the actual punishment is merited, call everything in overtime. That will lead to your goals. That will lead to, you know, they're
shorter overtimes.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. you know, frankly, for me, I remember, what was it, 2003, the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, when they were still mighty.
Right.
And they were on their big Cinderella run to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I still talk about that five overtime game mm-hmm. That they played, I believe, against the Minnesota Wild. And, you know, it was a heck of a night. And it's one that goes down in the history books for me as far as my experience as a fan.
I watched the entire Pittsburgh-Philadelphia game when Keith Primo scored in five and put up all overtime. I stayed up for the entirety of Game 6 between Buffalo and Dallas. Mm-hmm. There's multiple triple overtime games between Edmonton and Dallas. In the late 90s.
Right.
There's any number of great games. It's not even that. It's the way we want the games decided. The players want it decided this way. The fans want it decided this way. I don't care what NBC wants. I don't care what ESPN wants.
Yeah.
This is what we want. And we don't need the networks. Distribution is not in the hands of the not in the hands of the monolithic networks anymore, so there's absolutely no reason to kowtow to them.
Yeah.
At this point in time, let the NHL would be smarter maintaining
not to mess around. Yeah, right. To do nothing.
Right. No. Maintaining creative content, contentual and distributive control of their content, mm-hmm. period. And then let the chips fall from there.
That's why they started their own blogging network, because they wanted to control the blogging about hockey. And it's not that they
fair enough.
It's not that they didn't understand the power of blogs. They just didn't want it out of their control necessarily. But yet,
fair enough.
they'll hand over everything for NBC, which I can understand in a way. If you get you're trying to distribute your product and get especially post lockout, make sure that the product is out there. So that people know it's there, but at this point, I think it's pretty much academic. Yeah,
we're four years out from the lockout. The people who are hockey fans, the damage to the game in so many ways is much greater if they change the overtime format than the benefits from the couple of thousand extra people they get on NBC. Yeah. This comes up every year because. By God, I said it on Sunday when I was watching the game. I said, oh, my God, I'm so glad that this didn't happen yesterday and before the Kentucky Derby, and the game would have had to go to versus like it happened a couple of years previously where they scrambled at the last minute to show us the overtime between Buffalo and Ottawa because of the Kentucky Derby. I'm like, look, NBC has a choice to make, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they choose the Kentucky Derby over the NHL. Well, the NHL should choose somebody else over NBC then.
And I was actually complaining the other day on as a guest poster on Puck the Media, Steve Lepore's site, mm-hmm. about my TV experience over the past year, since I am on the road most of the time. And it's pretty rare to get versus when I was in when I was most recently in East Lansing. I had to hook up my laptop to the cable to be able to get the CBC to watch hockey. Mm-hmm. So, here we are moving everything around because kowtowing to NBC, which I can understand. Like you said, it is their choice. But, I just hope that the NHL doesn't decide to treat to look at regulation and say, well, this is our guiding factor. Because it really isn't. I mean, everybody agrees that – well, everybody, quote-unquote, agrees that in the NHL, the playoffs are more important, more intense, everything. than the regular season. People find the regular season boring. Yeah,
more new fans are created during the playoffs because that's when the games matter. That's when the players are playing. Anybody will say it. It's so much easier for me to sell the game to non-hockey fans during the playoffs than it is at any other time during the year. And mm-hmm. My wife watches more during the playoffs than she would normally anymore. All of my friends that I've turned onto the game always turn into the playoffs. When I was living in Gainesville, closer to my friends, they would all come over during the playoffs. They would come over. People who wouldn't normally watch hockey during the regular season, no, they were out doing other stuff. Once the playoffs started, okay, we're at Tom's house.
Yeah.
And we're going to be sitting on this couch and we're going to be ordering pizza and we're going to be doing all the things you would normally do. And it's a big 2-month-long nightly party.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We did it for years,
and people are doing it today. Yeah, and thank goodness. Another media story that always seems to come up about this time: first round, early first round, later first round, early second round. That Pavel Datsyuk needs to kick up his game. I think that all these things just need to be filed away into a playoffs folder, and then we can all drag it back out.
I couldn't believe what I read on Puck Daddy that Mitch Albom said the other day. That guy has got to be fundamentally the worst sports writer of all time.
What did he say?
Oh, I can't even remember what it was now. It was something really dumb. Oh, about how – I think it was – was he one of the people talking about how lucky Anaheim was to even be, you know, on the same ice with the great Detroit Red Wings. I think that was his angle this month. He's just worthless.
By the way, can I say that I said that I didn't think that the Ducks had a shot in hell of beating San Jose, and boy, was I wrong. Totally admitted. And, no problem. Yeah. And boy, am I happy that I was wrong, because I think that they are giving Detroit a run for their money.
It's, you know, I remember when Eric was on the show and he talked about that defense. And he brought up, you know, the trades for Ryan Whitney and James Wisniewski. That reminded me that the Ducks team has a lot of depth up front, and if they get good goaltending, they can be dangerous to anybody, because nobody can score against them. They have one of the best top to bottom best defenses in the NHL right now. Yeah.
And Hiller has been great in goals. So
phenomenal. I mean, from the blue line back, they're as good, if not better, than any team in the National Hockey League. I don't see a favor coming out of any of these eight teams. But one other point about money before we and media and all that, before we get off of it, apparently the NHL is taking care of the Phoenix Coyotes at this point. They're actually funding or haven't taken control of the team or...
There's a lot of reports that I believe it was the Glendale City manager said that the NHL was running the Phoenix Coyotes, but then Bill Daly said that that wasn't the case, which of course, you know, as they would, because that's what they do. Right. And so there's a lot of questions involved as to who's running the Coyotes, but it's fairly obvious. Dying on the vine.
Same thing with... the New York Islanders. Yeah. Charles Wang came out this week and said that, you know, all things being equal, he regrets buying the team. And apparently he sunk over $270 million of his own money to keep the team running over these past 8 or 9 years, however long it's been since he's owned it. That doesn't include the money he paid for the team.
Or buying out his partner who was in jail for fraud.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, you total that whole thing up, and you're looking at probably close to $500 million that he sunk into the New York Islanders. And
yet we keep Basile out.
Yeah, I mean, we keep Basile out because, you know, he might move a franchise. Like, you know, come on. Like, anybody – like, if the Islanders were to leave the island now, anyone would care.
No, I think that they're, you know, if there's anything that's keeping the Islanders there, it goes back to the early 80s and the four Stanley Cups in a row. And the fact that they're a quote-unquote New York team. But frankly, if you're going to be looking at a New York team and making that important, right now there are absolutely no New York area teams in the playoffs. You know, and so what are we doing? Well, we're featuring other teams that are really exciting, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. As an ex Islander fan, i.e. one that grew up on that dynasty, I'm okay with this franchise moving so as to no further sully the memory of those great teams. Yeah. and just move on with it. I mean, just literally, let's just move on and get it over and done with. If Kansas City wants them, let Kansas City have them. If Hamilton or Guelph or, you know, some suburb of Toronto wants them, great. Let's do something. Let's get the NHL in cities that want them and can support them.
You know, I would love to see something happen in Kansas City, but I don't see an NHL team going there. It's just, there's just not enough going on in Kansas City right now. They have a great brand new arena, which I understand is the threat. They have an area that's turning out to be just like every other downtown arena area, basically based on drinking and partying. Mm-hmm. And that's what they are basing their resurgence on. And then you go two blocks out from that area, and it's starting to look like a business district in Youngstown, Ohio. You know, where for lease signs are pretty much the booming industry. And that's, you know, that's not what you need. That's not what you need as a threat.
Well, I could go on and on about this particular thing. I was listening to a really good lecture from the Mises Institute on sports subsidy via local economies into the monolithic stadiums and all of this stuff. And it was really fascinating on how it all just – how on all of – every time they sell these arenas and whatnot, sports franchises to the city, they get it all backwards. And all of the the supposed economic benefits are just taking money from one section of the disposable consumer economy and transferring it to the sports team. It really has very little to do with quote-unquote economic growth or anything along those lines, but that's how it's always solved. And one of these days, and hopefully soon, we'll just have – I mean, that's what's happening in Hempstead. That's why they can't get – why Wine can't get a new arena in Hempstead, because they know better. They figured this out. And there's no he can't make a good argument for spending $3.7 billion and getting the taxpayers to fund most of it.
No, there's a there's a great book by and I'm partway through it. I need to actually get through the whole thing so I can report intelligently on it. But there's a good book about that called Welcome to the Terror Dome by, I hope I pronounce his last name, Dave Zirin, with a and actually has a preface by Chuck D of Public Enemy, so you know it's going to be right. At least interesting. But it's exactly about that. It you know, here's what the promise is of your new arena and keeping sports there, and here's what the reality is.
It's actually the whole thing can really be summed up very, very quickly by the whole Bastiat's broken window fallacy. There's what's seen and what's unseen. We see the concessionaire jobs and the usher jobs, and you know, and all of the bartender jobs and everything else. What we don't see are the closed clothing factories and the restaurants on the other side of town that close, and you know, all the other stuff. So you see this, and you can sell that, but you don't see how. Right. You don't see the loss on the other side. And it's so much of our economic discussion always focuses on, especially at the political level, always focuses on what's seen. And then, of course, there's always – because we like to conveniently ignore that which is unseen.
Oh,
and absolutely. That can be applied to so many issues.
Well, where's the dollar come from? Where's the entertainment dollar come from? Well, it comes from the same place it always came from.
Exactly.
And so you're just taking it from one place and putting it to another.
Right. Okay. So it's going from one owner's pocket to another.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, before we get back to the playoffs, I want to bring up something that I think that you're going to enjoy hearing about. I don't know if you've heard this today, but voted on by other players, the dirtiest guys in the NHL. Have you heard this survey yet?
No, I haven't.
You're going to love this. 324 players were surveyed, and Chris Pronger and Steve Ott were both tied for first place with 13% of the vote each.
That sounds about right.
Third place, Jarkko Ruutu with 12%, and then Sean Avery with 10%.
Wow.
And fifth is Scotty Hartnell with the Flyers.
Right. And so, those are all really – if the players are saying that, then it's not hard for us to – us who only watch the games as opposed to play them can see this pattern. It's nice to see that the players see the same things that we can see. So maybe our eyes really aren't so badly adjusted that they can't see that Chris Kunitz's cross-check to the neck of Semyon Varlamov should have been a 5-game friggin' suspension.
Yeah, now that's another that wow.
Colin Campbell must be blind.
And to set this up, this was near the end of the game, traffic in front of the net, Chris Kunitz, kind of in a fall. I would call it a intended cross check that masked as a follow through on trying to play the puck.
Yes.
Cross checks Varlamov in the mask and neck, and looks back. Looks at what he did.
Oh yeah,
it's not like he was saying, you know, he didn't. He wanted to see what the effect was, and so
it wasn't that he went to push him in the shoulder with a stick to get him to knock him off balance, and maybe they can get a shot through. Yada yada yada. No, he did. He tried that once, missed, and then cross checked him in the neck, and then looked back at him, see if he had fallen over. Mm-hmm. 5 games, minimum 5 games. Use of the stick to an unprotected area of the body of. Of a goaltender in a vulnerable position. I go on and on and on. If Chris Simon gets 30 games for whacking Ryan Hallweg, then where's Kunitz? Why is Kunitz still playing hockey?
Right.
Yeah, I know why. Because Colin Campbell is blind.
Right. Actually,
it's the only rational decision.
The funniest thing I heard, I can't remember who said it, was that the suspension for Chris Kunitz should be letting Donald Brashear off of his suspension.
Actually, this is where it's really good. Actually, I was thinking, you know, I think the punishment for Chris Kunitz should be to get cross checked in the neck.
Yeah, see how you
twice.
Like it. Yeah,
you know, it's cross check him in the neck twice, and then chase him around the ice with the stick afterwards.
Well, And if but you know, if Donald Brashear were to come back, and you know, my question is, would Chris Kunitz sit that night? Well, I doubt he'd sit, but you know, still.
and then Brashear running around the ice trying to kill Kunitz, and then we have Steve Moore, Todd Bertuzzi all over again, and then Donald Brashear is on the let's not go back to him.
I think that I was going to actually say that I think that since he's pretty much been on the receiving end of that kind of treatment, I don't think he's quite going to go that far, but you know. It was rather ridiculous, but and in such an intense and fun game to watch. You didn't get a chance to see it, did you?
No, I didn't. I caught game one, which was unbelievably good.
Oh my God, what an incredible!
It was so
game
good. I watched the replay Sunday morning on the NHL.
That was that's a phenomenal game. And then game two, I would say, was more the same, except that the first period, I was still waiting for the Capitals to actually get their legs. It seemed like it seems like their first periods don't really take off, and they should.
They're very disorganized in the first period. I think they're extremely and they're what I've seen in the first period. I mean, I've watched their first probably three or four so far in this playoffs. They're just extremely energetic, and they make bad decisions with the puck. They're playing very hard, and they're playing they're playing like smart defense. Mm-hmm. So they lots of ways, and then lots of just as quickly giving the puck up. So they're in the right position, they're back checking, they're working, and then they're throwing the puck around because they're too amped up. They're thinking too far ahead, too much adrenaline, and it takes about 10 or 15 minutes for that to get out of their system. Not just at home. I've seen this. This has happened on the road as well. So. Yeah. They've got to get that. They've got to get rid of that because either Boston or Carolina will make them pay if they get past Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that Varlamov has been. I'm mispronouncing it. Let me pronounce it correctly. I believe it's Simone Varlamov. Yes. Varlamov has been just incredible, and over, I see save after save that he's making. That I just keep thinking, Jose Theodore would not have made that. Jose Theodore would not have made that. Yeah, you know, and occasionally he gets himself a little bit out of position, but he's also dealing with a defense that is very offense oriented, if there's a 2-on-1, he's a guy who is athletic enough, kind of in the Tim Thomas vein, that he can get over quick enough and cover a defensive mistake. You know, a 2-on-1, the defender's supposed to allow take away the pass. And give the goalie the shooter. Well, that amazing stick save that Varlamov had to make was exactly for that reason. That the pass didn't get cut off, which happens. And just a phenomenal goaltending performance so far.
Yeah, he has been really good, and the Caps' defense has been they've been miscueing in the neutral zone. There was the Pierre McGuire diagram, at least two or three plays on Saturday, where you got four guys to the left of the faceoff dot, and then all four defensemen, all four back checkers, rushing the one guy and leaving three guys open. It was all sorts of stuff like that. The Crosby's first goal was a complete miscue in the neutral zone. John Erskine played the wrong guy and left Crosby free and created it and gave them a 2-on-1. There's all sorts of stuff like that. And Varlamov's been there for the most part to bail them out. Now, I will say this. The thing I think I was most impressive on Saturday was the saves he made right after giving up that second goal, which was definitely a floater. And it looked to me like, you know, he got that Fleury was outstanding for the first 10 minutes of the first seven or 8 minutes of the second period, where the Caps literally should have scored three times. And you think, well, then he gives up a softie, and you're thinking, well, he's not being able to handle the pressure. Fleury elevated his game. Now he hasn't been able to elevate his. He gives up that soft goal, and you expect the wall to start crumbling. And he comes back and makes like three or four unbelievable saves right after that. Like, well, No problems with this kid's head. Not at all.
And what was it? One of the defensemen said, I think it was a Caps defenseman. And you know, I gotta sit with a notebook so I can just jot who it was. After the game, said Varlamov lets in one bad goal a game. We can handle that. And right. That's what he's pretty much done. I mean,
yeah.
Every goal on yesterday in game two was pretty much, you know, not cleaning up in front of the in his crease. That was what the first two goals were, and then there was the Crosby baseball bat goal,
right?
Which led him to his hat trick. And of course, everybody's going to say that this was just one of the most incredible games because Crosby gets a hat trick and Ovechkin gets a hat trick.
Yeah, that's just insane. That's just insane. And Ovechkin is otherworldly. I'm at the point now where my opinion of Ovechkin, now having really watched him in the playoffs and watching him just literally dominate, he's twice the player Peter Forsberg was in his prime.
Mm-hmm. No, that, absolutely.
I mean, he is, and Forsberg in his prime was one of, if not the dominant player in the NHL. And Ovechkin is literally twice the player. And Crosby is right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not quite as mean, or at least overtly mean. I mean, but wow.
Well, he's not mean, but he apparently has something has a problem with hats.
Yes, he does. At least when they're when they're of the red variety.
Yeah, I love this. He was asked in a post game what he after the Ovechkin hat trick. He went over to the ref and in the press conference he was asked what did he say to the ref, and here's I'm reading this off Puck Daddy, even though I think it was, I'm not sure if he got the direct quote or if it was the Washington Post or what, but this is from Crosby. People kept throwing hats. I was just asking if we could make an announcement to ask them to stop. The first wave came and then I think we were all pretty much picked up and more started coming. What does he think is going to happen if they're asking them not to throw hats for a little bit? People are going to be running back to the concession stand to get more hats. They're going to go anywhere they can.
At him.
They're going to.
Are you kidding?
Oh, I bet Leonsis would have a $5 hat night. You know, for the cheapest hat that they possibly could, and then just throw them.
Yep. I know, and he was probably asking for a penalty too. Don't anybody kid you. Ducks Red Wings, really good, fantastic. Yeah. Triple overtime. Todd Marchand. Best part about that was that they interviewed Marchand between the second and third overtimes, mm-hmm. and then 5 minutes later he scores the big overtime winner.
I was listening to him on XM radio, and he was still ecstatic. It was the next day, and he's just, oh my god, I can't believe. I was driving, so I was listening to the game, and unfortunately, XM satellite radio, which obviously is run by computer most of the time, isn't used to handling long games, and therefore would cut away, and then we'd cut back with the other side with the other announcers, then cut away to ads in the middle of play and back and forth, and it became absolutely unlistenable after a while. So wow. I just had to turn it off after a while. But what a series!
Yeah, it's been really good. And talk about great goaltending. Jonas Hiller, wow. Mm. Just wow. Yeah. This is great stuff. I mean, everything that's – I mean, what's really funny about this is that, you know, Anaheim really did need to win that second game because, honestly, they almost stole game one in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that game had overtime written all over it. And Jesus Christ, the Ducks are more than capable from the blue line back of beating anybody in this league.
Yeah,
they may pull off the upset on the Red Wings. They're going to go back. They're tough at Honda Center too.
And who have the most important, impressive goaltending performances so far in this second round? Hiller and Varlamov. And I mean, mm-hmm. these are two out of nowhere goaltenders for this. You know, starting this season essentially.
It's great. I love it. It's fantastic. I caught game one for the most part of Boston Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Would not have predicted after watching that game that Carolina would come back and shut Boston out at home.
Mm.
I did not see game two. From everything I've heard, Boston didn't get a sniff.
No, and everything I saw highlight wise was that it was the Eric Staal show.
Yeah.
I mean, he got, I think he only had 2 points in the night. But he had, you know, apparently he was everywhere. Zdeno Chara was all over him, and mm-hmm. and he still performed, quite well. So,
yeah, Carolina's tough. It's funny. I go through all of these series, and I'm looking at everything right now, and I've watched at least one game from each series, mm-hmm. and frankly, I don't see a dominant team from either conference.
No.
I the Blackhawks, I thought they were done as dinner halfway through the through game two against Vancouver. I fell asleep for a little bit and woke up in the middle and woke up in the early in the third period, and they tied it, and then they went ahead. I was like, oh my God. They went ahead late in the second period, and then someone call Chicago and tell them that they're too young to be doing this. It's insane what's happening out there.
Yeah.
Wow, that they lit up Luongo for six. They went down by two, and they just went to town. They were like, that's it. We need to start. We need to win now. We need to score. And they just, one goal at a time, let's get back in the game. One goal at a time, let's get back in the game. They got back in the game, and they just took the damn thing over. Crazy.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And if anything, in this playoffs, no game is over. That's, you know,
not at all.
Carolina proved that absolutely with their with the way that they finished off the New Jersey Devils.
Twice.
Just
in
amazing.
The last minute. Just crazy. So, yeah, I'm looking at the four teams in the East. I'm looking at the four teams in the West, and you might be able to handicap one versus the other. And, you know, you might still give the nod to Detroit as the most complete team. And this, but every one of them is vulnerable. And everyone, I could see any one of the four teams in either conference playing for the Stanley Cup at this point. I think it's completely wide open.
Yeah.
I just do.
I agree with you. It's who would think that the Ducks as an eighth seed that essentially kind of snuck in near the end in those last 10 games? Nobody knew whether or not they were going to make it at all. The last five was coming. I mean, it was coming down to the wire for them, and they're not just, you know, they're skating with the Red Wings, which is not, you know, that isn't easy to do these days.
No, they play a particular brand of defensive hockey. They skate hard. They're big. They're mean. They're strong. They're solid in their own zone. I mean, come on. Niedermeyer, Pronger, Boshman, Whitney, and Wisniewski is your top five defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put that up against anybody in this league and any seven defensemen in this league, any seven players in this league, because literally those five guys are seven players. Because Pronger counts as two, and so does Niedermeyer.
Yeah, they're skating half an hour at least each.
Yeah, in any way. I mean, Pronger skated, 55 minutes of the game the other night? Something ridiculous. I can only imagine. I didn't actually check the ice time, but he normally plays 30 through
60. Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's just insane. So
he was on Jim Rome the other day, and I got to say, you really want to see Chris Pronger like more of from the waist up rather than like just like the shoulders up, because he really looks like a dork from the shoulders up. But when you get him, like, what was it, at the very beginning of that of the Ducks Red Wings game too, it was him and Panger. Poor Panger, he's looking up at him like, "Daddy, can I get on the rides now?" I mean,
yeah,
it's just
really
the saddest thing ever. He's huge. He's absolutely gigantic.
Ryan Whitney's 6'4", 6'5".
Oh, my God.
You know, Wisniewski's not small. I mean, this is a very, very, very tough hockey team to play against.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, was it Marchand said in the post-game interview after he scored, he said, you know, they just asked him, so, you know, you're glad that, you know, did you think that this was a do-or-die game for you guys? He said, well, I mean, yeah, because we really knew, we didn't want to go down 2-0 to the Red Wings, but frankly, you know, our practices are harder than this game was.
Wow.
That's what he said. I mean, I'm like, Randy Carlyle must be rough. So they're in great shape. They can skate like that all night long.
Mm-hmm. I never thought of Ryan Getzlaff as being that big of a guy until, I mean, you know, then finally saw him against some guys that, oh, well, you know, just kind of shows the size of the rest of the team. I just never thought he was that big.
There's a good mix on Anaheim, and don't be surprised. At this point, I'm nothing will surprise me at this point. So.
Well, it's a really fun series, and especially when Blackhawks and Canucks kind of get pushed to the back burner because everything else is so good.
That thing has been fantastic. It's been some great hockey. By God, has that been good?
I really haven't. That's the one that I haven't seen enough of.
I watched most of it.
I need to correct that. In fact, I think I'm about to. So I think that about does it. More playoff action. Three teams are tied at 1-1. And Washington is the only one that's jumped out. So
Washington's the only one that's defended their home rink.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So yes, it is.
It's making for some good playoff hockey.
So. Game two winners were Carolina Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Anaheim. And the game two winner, more often than not, wins the series. Mm. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. No, Washington, not Pittsburgh.
That's I said Pittsburgh. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you said Pittsburgh.
Washington.
That's okay. I wasn't. I wouldn't have even corrected you. I knew what you meant. I think everybody
fix
else
it in
did
the
too.
Edit. Fix it in the edit. Not that happy note, James. I'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. That does it for episode 32 of The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can become a Facebook fan, subscribe to us on iTunes, find links to the things we talked about, or even leave a comment about anything you heard us say. You can email The Rink at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks for listening to The Rink.